From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, Manila. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Coast AM Worldwide. Coast to coast, all around the world, covering all the time zones. It is my honor and privilege to be escorting you through this weekend. I'm Art Bell, and, well, it's just, it's going to be a very interesting weekend. It's going to begin tonight with the fact that our guest is jet-lagged, not feeling very well. So the guest we're going to have is only going to be here for 2 hours, Dr. James Kanton, who has just flown back from Indonesia, actually near me, and he's jet-lagged as hell, and I understand that. You cannot make that kind of flight without really getting whacked. So that's the situation with our guests. Therefore, we will have lots of open lines tonight, first hour and last hour, purity open lines. That means you can begin dialing right now. Let me catch you up on just a couple of things before we begin. The webcam shot tonight is just simply me. I just poked my face in front of the webcam a few minutes ago and took a shot and sent it. So no prep, whatever it is. Now, my wife is currently watching a big fight going on between a Filipino fighter and a Mexican fighter, and I imagine some of you are probably getting it on HBO Live. And it is being telecast here live. It's a big event. So if you hear a scream from the other room, she's pretty much into fights. And so if you hear a scream, that'll be her, and she can't help herself, I guess. What's happened? Well, in the last week, I couldn't stand it anymore. And I went up to the roof of our condo building late at night. And I dangled some coax down toward my window. We're on the 19th floor of this building of 20 floors. And Aaron, if you will, hooked it with an umbrella and brought it in. And then I went up and climbed a ladder, which is on top of the 200-foot mark. Actually, is a little area up above, and I put in a sneaky antenna that they really can't see. Well, they'll see it if they really go to a lot of trouble, but they can't see it. So I actually am on, for those hams out there, I'm on 20 meters right now. And I wish to note something totally bizarre, and I'm sure it can be explained to me by somebody who knows an awful lot more about the ionosphere than I guess I do. I thought I knew about propagation on shortwave. But now that I've been on the air here for about 3 or 4 days, and I've got to tell you, it's weird. 20 meters, or 14 megahertz, if you will, is in the United States, in North America, mainly at this part of the sunspot cycle, if anything at all, only a daytime band. It opens up during the day, and you hear whatever you're going to hear. And then at night, it closes down, just like a bar closing early, about when the sun goes down. Well, here in the Philippines, it is the exact opposite, and I simply don't understand the physics behind what's going on. So one of you brighter than I am people out there, explain this to me. I always thought of the ionosphere kind of like, a loose analogy would be like a cloud. And when the sun is ionizing the ionosphere during the day, this cloud gets thicker and therefore begins reflecting signals at 14 megahertz. Right? Sort of right? Well, here in the Philippines, I was shocked to find out the band is deader than a doornail during the day when the sun is ionizing. And within minutes of the sun going down, the exact opposite of North America, within minutes of the sun going down, the band begins to open here. And I begin to be able to talk to stations in, Indonesia, Vietnam, Cambodia, China, Africa. And they all tell me the same thing. Everybody that I'm able to talk to at these hours tells me the same thing, that their band also traditionally opens up at night. Now, that is so completely opposite of anything that I've ever been used to that I just don't understand the physics behind it. Now, it must have to do with Yeah, it must have to do with being closer to, you know, we're fairly close to the equator here, so maybe that's it. I don't know. It is bizarre. Let me tell you, it's bizarre. I waited all day long, nada, nothing, and then the sun goes down, and I was ready to pack it in, and then the signals begin to come in, and I'm going, what? So anyway, there you have it. There I was, dangling a couple hundred feet above ground, putting up this antenna in a place that they're unlikely to see for at least a little while, so I'm having fun. Looking briefly at the world, always a little depressing, lobbying world leaders, our president, President Bush, sought China's support Sunday for pressuring long-defiant North Korea to prove that it's serious about dismantling its nuclear weapons program. China is a very important nation, and the United States believes strongly that by working together, we can help solve problems such as North Korea and Iran. That's President Bush as he sat down for talks with the Chinese president. Like North Korea, Iran is also suspected of pursuing nuclear weapons. Speaking of that region of the world near Iran, Iraq, Iraqi and American forces fought Sunni insurgents in an hours-long street battle Saturday in the increasingly violent city of Baquabua as residents fled indoors under a rattle of automatic weapons fire and the blasts of rocket-propelled grenades. City police said at least 18 are dead, 19 wounded. Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes exchanged vows Saturday in a lavish, star-studded wedding celebration in a kind of a fairy tale setting, a glowing 15th-century castle in this medieval lakeside town. Richard Gere, Jennifer Lopez, she was there, huh? And Jim Carrey, among more than 150 relatives and friends at the union of Tomcat. That's what they call it, Tomcat. Whose relationship has created a media firestorm since the superstar couple announced it a little more than a year and a half ago. What is it with the stars marrying each other anyway? In the beginning, there were eight, a squad of seven Marines and a Navy corpsman charged with kidnapping and murdering an Iraqi man. A crime described by prosecutors as especially brutal. They faced military trials. The death penalty is on the table, so you might want to watch that one. The Sudanese army and government-backed militias are committing acts of inexplicable terror against civilians, including children. In Darfur, the UN's top humanitarian official said Saturday the accusations by Jan England, UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, came as Sudanese officials indicated they might backtrack from a deal for a mixed UN and African peacekeeping force. One person killed, another critically injured in an incident involving a bus carrying Kansas State University fans to Saturday's football game at the University of Kansas. The one vehicle accident happened around 11:30 in the morning, less than 2 miles from Memorial Stadium. Few details available by late afternoon, but police would not identify the dead and injured except to say both were male. Nintendo's quirky new video game console goes on sale Sunday. Just 2 days after the launch of the rival PlayStation 3 from Sony turned violent at some stores. The release of this new little goodie expected to be less dramatic, mainly because Nintendo has made sure that there's a good supply out there. Sony didn't muster as many, and so the world, as you've heard, went wild with representatives and other people extending influence or their assistance, it was said, extending influence to get one for Congress people and that sort of thing. So I guess PlayStation 3 is a big deal. In a moment, we'll look at some of the rest of the news. By the way, progress to report, I have gone from smoking, well, chain smoking, actually. I was a chain smoker, no doubt about it. And I've gone from chain smoking to about 4 cigarettes a day. 4 cigarettes a day. Never in all my life did I think I could accomplish that. But that's where I am right now, and I'm on the verge of casting them away. Now, most of the rest of the time, I'm chewing nicotine gum. As you know, there was a big earthquake during the week, 8.1, that rocked the northern Japanese islands. And then there was a tsunami, a small one, albeit. But it hit the Northern California coast at about 2:30 in the afternoon. Water was pulled out to sea at about 30 miles an hour, tearing apart many docks in the harbor, disrupting the shoreline. Officials described it as a river-like current, not a wave. The surge, of course, returning a short time later, again wreaking havoc on the harbor. Officials say the worst-hit docks were three large docks that catered to sports boats. No injuries have been reported, but some boats have been damaged. Officials say about half the Crescent City Harbor is destroyed. They say several smaller docks simply are gone. The water didn't reach past the beaches, and officials say besides the fishing industry, they don't think any businesses were harmed. Beaches weren't evacuated, but authorities warned beachgoers and boaters they were at risk. There are no public safety concerns as of now. At the southern end of Madagascar lie four enormous wedge-shaped sediment deposits called chevrons. They're composed of material from the ocean floor, each covering about twice the area of Manhattan, with sediment as deep as the Chrysler Building is high. That's one hell of a lot of sediment. On close inspection, the chevron deposits contain deep ocean microfossils that are fused with a medley of metals typically formed by cosmic impacts, and all of them point in the same direction, toward the middle of the Indian Ocean, where a newly discovered crater 18 miles in diameter lies 12,500 feet below the surface. Now, what does all this mean? I bet you know. The explanation is obvious to a lot of scientists. A large asteroid, or perhaps comet, kind that could kill a quarter of the world's population, smashed into the ocean about 4,800 years ago, producing a tsunami. Get this, since we were talking about tsunamis, at least 600 feet high, about 13 times the size of the one that inundated Indonesia nearly 2 years ago. The wave carried the huge deposits of sediment to land. Most astronomers doubt that any large comets or asteroids have crashed into the Earth in the last 10,000 years. But the self-described band of misfits that make up the two-year-old Holocene Impact Working Group say the astronomers simply have not known how or where to look for evidence of impacts along the world's shorelines and the deep ocean. In other words, they don't think land has been hit in that period of time, but remember, we are more ocean than we are land. Scientists in the working group say the evidence for such impacts during the last 10,000 years, known as the Hypocene Epoch, is strong enough to overturn current estimates of how often the Earth suffers a violent impact. Get this, on the order of a 10-megaton explosion, instead of once in every 500,000 to 1 million years, as astronomers now calculate, catastrophic impacts could happen every few thousand years. It is indeed the stuff of nightmares, and until now, Hollywood thrillers. A huge asteroid is on a catastrophic collision course with Earth, and mankind is poised to go as the dinosaurs went. To save the day, NASA now has plans to go where only Bruce Willis has gone before. The U.S. Space Agency drawing up plans right now to land an astronaut on an asteroid hurtling through space at more than 30,000 miles an hour. Wants to know whether humans could master techniques needed to deflect such a doomsday object when it is eventually identified. Now, the proposals are at a very early stage. The spacecraft needed to send astronauts that far into space exists only on the drawing board, but they are deadly serious. A smallish asteroid called Apophis, I'm sure you've heard about that, right, has been identified as a possible threat to Earth in 2036. Chris McKay of the NASA Johnson Space Center in Houston told the website space.com that there's a lot of public resonance with the notion that NASA ought to be doing something about killer asteroids to be able to send serious equipment to an asteroid. Public wants us to have mastered the problem of dealing with asteroids, so being able to have astronauts go out there and sort of poke one with a stick would be scientifically valuable as well as demonstrate human capabilities. A 1 billion-ton asteroid, just 1 kilometer across, striking Earth at, say, 45 degrees of an angle, could create the equivalent of a 50,000-megaton thermonuclear explosion. Attempting to break it up with an atomic warhead might only generate thousands of smaller objects on a similar course, which could have time, then, to reform into one object. Scientists agree the best approach, given enough warning, would be to gently nudge the object into a safer orbit. A human mission to a near-Earth asteroid would be scientifically worthwhile, said McKay. There could be testing of various approaches. We don't know enough about asteroids right now to know the best strategy for mitigation. Matt Genge, a space researcher at Imperial College London, this is very interesting, has calculated that something with a mass, acceleration, and thrust of, say, a small car could push an asteroid weighing 1 billion tons out of the path of Earth in just 75 days. Now, that's worth going over again. They've calculated that something with the mass, acceleration, and thrust of a small car could actually push an asteroid weighing 1 billion tons out of its path headed toward Earth and our death in 75 days. That's an amazing. An asteroid expert at Glasgow University said the best approach would be to land a device to dig into the object. You could then place something on the surface to eject material that would push the asteroid in the other direction. Mirrors, lights, even a paint job could change the way the asteroid absorbed light and heat just enough to shift its direction over 20 years or so. With less notice, which I'm sure we'd have, much less, mankind could be forced to take more drastic measures, like setting off a massive explosion on or near the object to change its course. In 2005, NASA's Deep Impact mission, in fact, tested a different technique when it placed an object in the path of a comet. So you see, for some unaccountable, boy, I've been getting an awful lot of stories about this lately. I wonder if they have decided that Pophilus or one other object that they haven't told us about yet is somehow on an Earth-likely trajectory, and we are going to have to do something like this. I'm frankly very curious. I've just been getting story after story after story, and there's got to be a reason for that. Usually when you begin getting a lot of stories like this, something is going on out there. All right, let's see if we can pick up a call before we get to the bottom of the hour. Brad in Sacramento, California, you're on the air. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Brad.
Not me.
Okay, Brad, I guess you're not there. Daniel in Missouri, how about you?
Yes.
Daniel, you're on the air.
Okay. Well, I was at school and I was
What grade? What grade of school are you in?
Second grade.
Second grade. Okay.
I was just swinging at recess, and then I looked up, and then I saw sort of a UFO shape. I saw, like, a circle of different lights in the sky.
You did. Yeah. If you were at recess, then you must have been with many of your friends, right?
Yeah.
Did they also see it?
No.
They didn't. Didn't you say, look at that?
No.
Why? Were you shocked and you couldn't speak, or what?
Well, sort of.
Go ahead, Daniel. Anything else?
Nope. That's
it. All right, you should immediately have your mom or dad report this to somebody other than myself. Daniel, thank you for calling.
Okay.
Okay, see you later. 7 years old in the second grade, and he had a sighting that none of his, he just didn't think, apparently, to, You know, when you're seven, though, you might not. You might not. When you're 7 years old, you might not think that something is so odd that you should report it to your friends. When you're 7 years old, you might just stand there in the recess yard, staring up at it, not alerting anybody else because you just don't know that it's that unusual. At seven, those are just pretty lights in the sky, right? But I'm sure Daniel came home and told Mom and Dad, and maybe they're the ones that recommended that he call Art Bell. I don't know. But there you go. It begins early. A sighting like that, at 7 years of age, that can propel a lifetime of investigation, and who knows, maybe Daniel's going to become a ufologist. Sightings at that age do that kind of thing. From Manila, in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Indeed, here I am. We should have run the phone numbers there. So those of you that know the phone numbers, feel free to dial us up. We're in open lines this hour and also tonight because my guest is flown all the way from Indonesia back to the U.S. He is totally jet lagged, and so we'll only have him for 2 hours. He's an extreme futurist, so it should be very interesting. Everybody is interested in what's a-coming. So those of you that know the numbers, please proceed, and I'll get you on the air. Any subject is fair game for open lines. We'll get right back to it. My God, what a voice. I really don't like following Ross. He's got, I've got a fair voice, I know that, but that's a killer voice. I mean, that's a voice that could be doing movie trailers, right? And so following him isn't all that wise, but nevertheless, here we go. Let's try Brian in Sacramento, California on the wildcard line. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
I am doing well.
I have a question. I just finished up the book, a little bit behind, I guess, called Memoirs of a Psychic Spy by Joseph McMoneagle, I think his name is.
McMoneagle, yes.
Yeah, and I have kind of a question. I kind of really never had an opinion either way on it, but after reading this, I'm currently in the military. Do you think they're still recruiting that type of way? I mean, just coming into units?
I do. Yeah, the answer is I do. Now, every single one of the remote viewers says that there is no current program, but I'm suspicious of that for a whole lot of reasons. One, it's only the current or the past remote viewers, the ones that we knew were remote viewers in the CIA program. They are the only ones who are saying we don't have a program now. Everybody else suspects, including me, that we do. If you know what they say doesn't make sense. They say on the one hand it worked. We could find gas canisters and all that kind of terrible stuff on the other side of the world. Boy, if it worked, then we would still be using it, wouldn't we?
That's my point. That's what I was kind of confused on.
Well, your confusion is understandable. So I think we still have a program underway, and it's very black. And so the answer is, yeah, I think we do.
All right. Thanks, Art.
You're very welcome. You've got to admit, it's suspicious. All those who were in the secret CIA program, they all say, oh, no, it was too embarrassing for the government. They stopped the program. Well, they stopped the program they were in and sent them forth to inform the world about remote viewing. But since then, God knows how far they could have gone. So I'm only rendering an opinion, but based on what they say, if it works, and they all agree it works, if we're not using it, then some other country somewhere, like China or Russia, or one other country that would be our enemy, and there are many who don't like us, there would be a giant remote viewing gap, and we would be behind. Or they're right about there not being a program, because it doesn't work. It seems to me you cannot have it both ways. Chris in Staten Island, New York. Hello.
How you doing, Art?
I'm doing well.
I like your program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Basically, I wanted to ask you about your recording, like the Hell recording.
Yes.
Actually, you know, I tried a little investigation of my own.
Yes.
And I called up, like, the Archdiocese of New York.
Uh-huh.
And they said it's not true.
That's a matter of opinion because of all kinds of things. First of all, it was a real news story. In fact, I think it was a Reuters news story. And every time we've talked about this, I've had them dig it out.
Right.
Ran on Reuters.
Right.
And so the story was real. And I can't imagine a major U.S. news service making a story up. So there you are.
Well, they, but believe it or not, they've been investigating that SG3 for years.
Uh-huh.
And they sent an exorcist up there.
Up where?
Up to the Russian borehole that you were talking about a couple of.
They sent an exorcist up there.
Yes, they did.
Huh. Okay.
And they said they have proof, and they also go along with the person in the story who said.
Excuse
it was
me, but what were they going to attempt to do? Exorcise hell?
Well, that's what they said they did.
I mean, if it really was hell, that's quite an undertaking. That's not like getting rid of one spirit. I mean, that's a whole cauldron, a boiling pit of sewage, as J.C. puts it.
And they said they sent a priest up to the location also.
Well, I find that a little suspicious.
I know. Well, they said it was it's still under investigation, just in case anybody says anything more, basically, about it. And they have proof and all that stuff, too.
Okay, well, I wonder what proof they have. In the case of myself, as you know, I have a recording sent to me many years ago by a source claiming that it was the real McCoy. And I don't know. Most of the people that we have as guests on the program who talk about the other side one way or the other don't believe there even is a hell. That the only hell there is sort of a self-imposed thing, as you do a life review and you are meant to feel the pain of those that you have inflicted pain on during your life. And that's as much of a hell as there really is, I'm told. So maybe it's not real, but no matter what, it sure is scary stuff, isn't it? But west of the Rockies in California, Jacob, hi.
Hey, Art. I remember last week you were talking to a scientist about time travel and parallel universes.
What a hell of a show that was, yes.
Yeah. Well, some caller or somebody emailed you a question about you might not be able to wreck your universe, but you could really mess up somebody else's.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I think I have a theory for an answer for that.
Okay.
Well, as you time travel to the other universe or whatever, and you go back and make your grandfather not have a kid, your father, you stop him from doing that, and then.
In other words, you fix it so your dad never existed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now in the universe that you're in at that moment. You and your father never existed. So, but in your universe, nothing happened because you're in the other guy's universe. So in your universe,
well, that's exactly what the guest said.
Yeah.
So you're repeating what the guest said. That's exactly what he said. That you would not really disturb anything in your own universe, that you would only affect that other universe. Leaving true the proposition that you could definitely screw up somebody else's universe. It's not going to happen in our lifetimes, but I suspect within a few more lifetimes, we are going to prove or disprove and actually be able to communicate if it's true with other universes. And I suspect that it is true. I really do suspect it is true. And I think it's also very, very possible that a lot of what we regard as extraterrestrial in origin is actually extra-dimensional in origin. And that's not to say there are not ETs, because there probably are. Anybody who go out and look at the night sky, all those things you see up there are suns. We call them stars because they dot the night sky. But in reality, they're suns. And we have now come to find out around most of those suns, there are planets. And if that's true, and there is not life out there, given all those billions and billions of stars and planets, trillions of planets, I suppose. Trillions of suns, I suppose. I mean, the numbers are ridiculous to even talk about and not imagine that there's life out there. So there is. But whether or not it could reach us is an entirely a different question. Now, could something from another universe reach us? I suspect so. And do we have to thank for an awful lot of what we regard as a paranormal, the fact that we are in a multi-universe situation? I think so. Things that seem to pop in and out of reality, things that are seen by police officers and other people who are good observers, wouldn't screw around with us, and they've seen these things, and so many millions of people have seen craft and different things that appear and disappear, and how else would you explain that other than the strong possibility that there are multiple universes, and we get little peaks every now and then across them. Let's go to Canada, I guess, on, let's see, this would be wild card line 1, 2, 3, 4. You're on the air, Linda.
Hi, Art. I'm from another dimension. I thought I'd peek in for a bit. I wanted to know, have you heard that the Russians have stated that any foreign psychic spy or remote viewer that comes into their, say, realm to look in on them, that they have a way that they could actually send them a virus that could lead to insanity and even death?
Having interviewed almost all of the remote viewers, I could get comfortable with that notion, at least the first part of it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Are they ahead of us in that way, or in that?
I don't know. You know, it goes back to a caller we had a little while ago, Linda.
Yeah.
If it works, if remote viewing works, and we're not still doing it, then there's something drastically wrong with our national security setup, isn't there?
I agree.
If it works and we're not doing it, what the hell?
I agree.
So, yeah. I mean, why not? Sure, I think so. That was a little bit of a jab, and I should really take that back. They're not crazy. But if remote viewing is real, then I suppose somebody on the recipient end who had made a lot of progress in remote viewing could essentially plant a virus that could cause insanity. Why not? You're dealing, you're going brain to brain or consciousness to consciousness, right? And so very much like a computer. What is human insanity? It may be nothing more or less than a sophisticated computer virus. What a very interesting thought that is. Let's go to Kathy in Sacramento, California. Okay, we'll go to Kathy in a moment. Let's go ahead and take our break right now. Let's do what I said I was going to do before the break that was sort of. Kathy, you're on the air from Sacramento. Hello, Kathy.
Wouldn't it be interesting to find out that what we find to be extraterrestrials are calling us paranormal in the future? But the reason I was calling is I too have had many questions as to remote viewing and if we are using it in a non-conventional way of finding our enemy in the war. And I had an opportunity. I have a wonderful job. I shine shoes, and I get 15 minutes of everyone's world. And with my background in news, I get so many neat people. Well, I got a fighter pilot that came in, and I asked him, and he said they're using remote viewers.
Well, so you also believe it. You know, now we're look at this call after call after call, and I completely agree.
Absolutely.
But we're the only ones. Talk to any one of the remote viewers, and they say, "Oh no. There's no program going on now." So
yeah, I believe him. I do. And people really open up to me. It's very interesting. But there, I believe him. And he was made a couple references. He didn't give me anything in detail, but he'll be coming back, so I'll be able to get more information. I don't try to.
If this is somebody really in the know, hon, you get a hold of me, artbell@mindspring.com, and let me interview him. I really would like to interview somebody who knows what they're talking about on the subject. Can you do that for me?
Will do. Thanks for taking my call, Art.
All right. Thanks for making it, Kathy. I absolutely agree with that. And I've been curious and suspicious. I'm sure those of you who have heard the interviews I've done with the remote viewers, and over the years I've done many, many, many with just about every single known remote viewer out there, including Ingo Swann and, you know, the big ones in the field, and they all deny there's anything going on now. And I think that's suspicious. I'm not calling them liars. It may well be that... somebody in one of the lettered agencies told them, look, we're going to allow you to admit so much publicly, and that's that. But you're going to have to deny adamantly that there's any ongoing program, that we're done with it. I mean, look, just use simple human logic. On the one hand, every single one of them certifies that it works. You can find gas canisters, nuclear weapons, bad people. You can do all of that, they say, and it works. But, oh, no, we're not doing it anymore. Now, how much sense does that make? Let's travel east, way east it would be. Linda in Georgia, hi.
Hello, Mr. Bale. The reason I call, while back you were mentioning this technology, you know, for making humans visible. Well, it occurred to me.
Invisible, yes.
Huh?
Invisible.
It occurred to me, you know, if it could make humans invisible, could it be too far removed from having, you know, ghosts visible? You know, ghosts, shadow people. Yeah, that's just
That's worth thinking about. I mean, if you could make humans invisible, then perhaps you would be in the realm of those that are now invisible to us. Yes, who knows?
Yeah, that's food for thought for you, because I know that, you know, you could, you know, more for me, you know, physics or whatever.
Linda, if you were invisible, Linda, what would you do?
If I were invisible?
Yep.
I haven't the foggiest.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. It's something I haven't really thought about a lot.
All right,
sure
you give it some thought.
I'm sure I could come up with something good.
I'm sure you could. All right, next time you call, you let me know what you would do. We did a whole night on that once, if you were invisible. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell.